I believe that the laws are powerful too, that if respected and used with integrity, can deliver nuclear disarmament. However, as we know to our cost, powerful nations tend to act above them and to abuse power, which is why there is a need for a strong civil society to keep track and to pressure the governments and law courts to uphold international rules. This has been difficult because there's a great deal of official and public cynicism about law in general, and international law in particular, epitomised by views that the law serves the powerful in society, that it doesn't look after the interests of the poor or weak, and that it is the law of the victors over the vanquished. However, international humanitarian law is based on powerful foundational ideas of the protection of the weak and the powerless and of the environment. The Geneva Conventions and other war laws are good agreements that, if implemented, would keep warfare and conflicts within bounds so that civilized life could be rebuilt after violent conflicts have ended. Nuclear weapons completely undermine the whole thrust of international humanitarian law. We all know there are serious challenges. International law is not real law and it doesn't apply in Scotland. That's what a procurator fiscal said in Helens for District Court in 1999. And although not so frankly articulated in court, it was an attitude prevalent at all levels when applied to cases involving protests against nuclear weapons. This has now changed in Scotland, due in no small measure to the hundreds of anti-nuclear activists using international law arguments in their defence. International law is now recognised as an important element in the defence of activists, and is discussed in UK courts more and more. However, we still find prosecuting lawyers and some judges expressing impatience and strong disapproval of ordinary citizens meddling in the law, and a belief that amateurs shouldn't try to uphold the law or take the law into their own hands. We're told not to get involved, that it's up to the government, or the police, or the military, or some other institution to deal with crimes against peace or war crimes. But we all know that we can't rely upon these institutions to make the changes that we need. We have to act ourselves as responsible global citizens and be involved in people's disarmament. There are still outdated judgments in the UK that have been challenged because they are holding our courts back, like that of Hutchinson, which misinterprets the International Court of Justice's advisory opinion, or Chandler, which relies upon the principle of the royal prerogative to insist that the disposition of the armed forces is not justiciable, that it isn't for a judge or a jury to decide what the armed forces can and cannot do. In effect, these judicial precedents have prevented the courts from acting as a necessary balance to the power of the executive, and they've ensured that the courts do not do their job of judging whether the armed forces are acting within the law. This lack of judicial oversight has allowed the UK to cover up its legal gaps. And I understand that here too, in the USA, the legal system has been corrupted and uses various ways to try to prevent full legal arguments from being heard and judged, thus undermining the very rule of law that is there ostensibly to uphold. Nevertheless, it is our joint task to uncover the illegalities and criminalities of possessing and threatening to use nuclear weapons, and to demand a proper reckoning. We have to expose the hypocrisy of our countries expecting others to obey international law while refusing to obey it themselves. Actions like the Disarm Now Initiative action are part of this whole process of social transformation that takes much longer than we would all wish, but which is nevertheless having its effect. You face a much tougher challenge than we do, as you are more often refused the chance to prevent the evidence of the effects of nuclear weapons on people and the environment. This is because it is clear that if this evidence were given to an impartial jury, it would be obvious that these weapons break all the rules, and there would be a good chance of an acquittal. Over the coming days, we will no doubt witness the length to which the Tacoma Call will go to stop the truth from getting out. But it's our responsibility to make sure that nevertheless we take it out to a wider public. writing articles, by talking about it, doing whatever we can. And I hope that the coming trial will inspire you all to continue the non-violent civil resistance. I believe that our citizens' campaigns must carry on using international law to delegitimise nuclear weapons and to legitimise our own non-violent actions, and to do this in highly public and confrontational ways so that it cannot be ignored. We have to do this whilst keeping the moral arguments to the fore as well by emphasising the links between morality and law. Now, the core of our argument is very straightforward. Nuclear weapons are weapons of mass destruction and thus cannot be used with any precision or any pretense of righting any wrong. Their use is basically mass murder on a catastrophic scale with the potential for escalation to the use of thousands of nuclear weapons, which could put an end to all life on Earth. The law is based on ethical values and is respected insofar and only insofar as it conforms to common human morality. Governments, soldiers and armed forces gain their legitimacy and power from the law, and thus the law is of immense importance to them. The only thing that distinguishes a soldier from a common murderer is that he has been given legal permission to do certain kinds of killing on behalf of society. This legalised killing is meant to be carefully controlled by laws, the most important of which are international humanitarian laws, which outlaw indiscriminate mass murder. Our acquittal agreement cleared us of criminal intent, and at the same time clearly pointed out the criminal intent of the British nuclear forces. One of the unforeseen but beneficial outcomes of our actions with Trident Township in Scotland has been the education of not only ourselves and the general public, but also lawyers, police and military personnel. Many of them were unaware of the Genocide Act or the Geneva Conventions Act, for instance, that directly incorporate international law into UK law. More recently, we've also worked with other organisations to put on a prestigious international law conference to discuss Scotland's obligations under international law, to which we invited lawyers, judges and members of the Scottish Parliament. And I thought I would end with a couple of quotes from the book of the proceedings that is due to be published in January this next year. Firstly, here is a quote from Judge Bejawi, who was the President of the International Court of Justice during the advisory opinion on nuclear weapons in 1996. He was writing for a specifically Scottish audience, but the principles are relevant to all of us. And remember that the warheads here in the USA are much more powerful than the 100 kiloton warheads in the UK. He states, in accordance with evidence heard by the court, he's talking about the International Court of Justice, it is clear that an explosion caused by the detonation of just 100 kiloton warhead would release powerful and prolonged ionizing radiation which could not be contained in space or time and which would harmfully affect civilians as well as combatants, neutral as well as belligerent states and future generations as well as people targeted in the present time. In view of these extraordinarily powerful characteristics and effects, any use of such a warhead would contravene international and humanitarian laws and precepts. In other words, even in an extreme circumstance of self-defense in which the very survival of the state would be at stake, the use of a 100 kiloton nuclear warhead, regardless of whether it was targeted to land accurately on or above a military target, would always fail the tests of controllability, discrimination, civilian immunity, neutral rights, and would thus be unlawful. He then went on to say, the modernisation, updating or renewal of such a nuclear weapon system would also be a material breach of the non-proliferation treaty obligations, particularly the unequivocal undertaking by the nuclear weapon states to accomplish the total elimination of their nuclear arsenals leading to nuclear disarmament, and the fundamental Article 6 obligation to negotiate in good faith on cessation of the arms race and on nuclear disarmament, with the understanding that these negotiations must be pursued in good faith every citizen, so that includes all of you, every citizen has an obligation to use his or her influence to prevent crimes against humanity. Indeed, anti-nuclear civil resistance is the right of every citizen of this planet, for the nuclear threat, attacking as it does every core concept of human rights, calls for urgent and universal action for its prevention. If it is a basic human right to be free of threat or violence, if the right to life is a basic human right, and if the protection of children and future generations is a basic human duty, international law must unhesitatingly recognise that the right to non-violent resistance activities for the prevention of such an international crime is basic to human dignity. It is clear that there is an increasing need in the modern world for citizens to take a greater interest in international law and in the way their government fulfills its obligations in this regard. This is increasingly a matter for the citizenry of the world, and if they do not rise to their obligations in this respect, future generations will pay dearly for this inaction. So you see, the law is on our side, humanity is on our side, the vast majority of the countries in the world want nuclear disarmament and are on our side. Eventually, if we keep our fragile candle, hope, love and non-violent resistance alight, we will get nuclear disarmament. So I wish you strength and hope.